Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, it's happened again. It happened just the other day. A couple that I've been working with is probably headed for divorce. They both assured me that it wasn't about my efforts to guide them. And as disappointed as I was, I'm really not surprised by their pending decision. Because they've been having problems for over a year, and they weren't consistent about coming in once they started to work with me. Now, the reasons that they had for missing appointments or not making appointments were absolutely legitimate, but it also kept them from making any progress. And the bigger problem, like it often is that they waited too long to actually reach out for help. Now, couples therapy, coaching, whatever you want to call it, has a reputation for being ineffective. But we don't blame cancer centers for being ineffective when their patients don't survive. But the truth is, in both cases, the success rate is higher the earlier the problem is addressed. And while there used to be stigma around cancer, for a long time it was just referred to as the C word, that has changed. Unfortunately, the stigma around couples counseling shows little to no sign of abating. And that's really too bad, because most marriages can be improved with a little guidance. So what needs to happen to remove the stigma from this, what I call the double C word? It's a dilemma that my field has been facing for what seems like forever. So today, I'm bringing in the big guns. I'm going to one of the people in our field who knows a lot about this to tackle this challenge, psychologist, author, and host of the Self-Work with Dr. Margaret Rutherford. That's a mouthful. Dr. Margaret Rutherford is here to tease out some answers. She's a regular contributor to the Gottman Relationship blog, which is part of the Gottman Institute, which is one of the big research facilities in our field, and she's also contributes to other well-known websites like the Good Men Project. So, Dr. Rutherford, Margaret, thank you so much for being on the show and talking about what I know to both of us is near and dear to our hearts.
Thanks, Leslie. I'm delighted to be here, and you're right, that is a mouthful. Yes, I am a huge advocate for couples therapy. I do a lot of it. I was trained at Southwest Family Institute in Dallas during my graduate school work and really fell in love with it there, where I could see that, and actually I think there's research to back this up, that if you work with an individual whose major problem is unhappiness with their relationship or their marriage, that they are actually more likely to divorce. So,
interesting.
If you get both people in the room with you, you have a fighting chance, as we'd say here in Arkansas, to help, as your word was guide, to help them have both compassion for themselves and for each other, and to move out of whatever kind of entrenched patterns they've gotten into that are really destroying their relationship, because those are so easy to for all of us to get into.
Well, yes, and here's the truth of the matter. We are all in them. The problem is that we don't know that we're in them.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, my friend and I, who's also a psychologist, she was here visiting me this weekend, and she's single, and we were laughing about, you know, you never feel healthier than when you're not in a relationship because you don't have anybody to challenge you or to even trigger your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be a little lonely, but you at least feel healthy. So you
well,
get in a relationship.
At least nobody's making you, well,
yeah,
not
exactly.
It can make you feel a certain way, but at least you're not feeling bad because you feel like you're not doing something the right way, which if I could eliminate right from the dictionary along with should, I'd be a happy camper.
Yeah, wouldn't we all? Wouldn't we all? But, you know, so many people who are married or in long-term relationships believe that those relationships will sustain themselves. And so they don't They don't try to nurture it. They just, again, the common phrase is they take it for granted.
Right. And I talk about it putting on the back burner because everything else is squeaking and we're okay, so, you know, we can leave it sitting there, but, you know, I tell people that nothing thrives on neglect in your relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
It's right there with you.
Exactly. And so I believe I've been in couples therapy. I've been in individual therapy. Individual therapy is a breeze compared to couples work. But it is so wonderful and something to be celebrated when it works and when people take responsibility for themselves as individuals, look at their particular contribution to the problem and focus on that. That's what we all have things we like to say as therapists, and one of the things I like to say is, what can you actually do about it? You can only do things that you have control over. So one of the things in couples work that I do a lot of is trying to get couples to stop focusing on the other one and to start focusing on their own behavior and their own actions.
Well, and that's and what you talk about, things that we say, you know, all the time, are isms. Is, you know, a friend of mine asked me, what are your Leslie isms? And, you know, for me, a Leslie-ism is that when we're in a relationship, we have a built-in scapegoat, that if my partner would just do this or stop doing that or whatever, and it's like, yeah, and you've got to stop looking at your partner and start looking at what you're contributing, which, of course, is what nobody wants to do.
No. It's hard. You have to be kind of brutally honest, and there's a person sitting right across from you who's going to remind you of those things.
And not in a productive way.
They probably wouldn't be in your office if they could have those discussions in a productive way. One of the things, you know, when you sought me out, you had read the article on the Gottman blog, and I opened that article saying one of the things that therapists love to hear is, well, we don't really have a big problem, but we've come in to work on blah, blah, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is like, oh, my gosh, thank goodness. People are not waiting until they've both been to divorce lawyers and then saying, okay, you've got three sessions and you need to help us fix this.
Oh, they give you three? They give me one. It's like, if we don't see dramatic improvement before we leave, it's like, okay, where's my magic wand? I would really like Harry Potter World to be real because I want that magic wand.
Right. Wouldn't that be nice? So actually talk about my therapeutic magic wand occasionally when I'm talking about what I would love to have happen. But I'm thrilled to be on here, thrilled to be on the program and to talk more about maybe some of the misconceptions or things that keep people from seeking therapy, especially couples work. So I'm delighted to be here.
Well, and I wanted to talk about this, and the title of your piece is "It's Time to Stop the Stigma Around Couples Therapy."
Right.
And I grew up in Los Angeles, where it's one of the places where if you don't have a therapist, everybody goes, "What's the matter with you?" So there are certain areas, but that's individual therapy, which some people are seeing, you know, the value of this, and I love the new commercial that shows up on television where it's, you know, find the therapist through a phone app, and I'm wondering, okay, how does that work? But I can guarantee you, you're not doing couples therapy that way. But
no, probably not.
There is this, and I think it was Gottman, I think it was the Gottman Institute, John Gottman and his wife, that discovered that it takes an average of 6 to 7 years of a couple being really unhappy, not just kind of meh, but unhappy before they seek help.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people wait so long?
Well, I think there are several reasons. The ones that the misconceptions or what people tell themselves about seeking therapy, about what it might be like. They've heard about people in therapy. They may have friends that have been in therapy, but they have these terrific misconceptions about what even coming in and talking about their relationship would be like. And I both in my writing, in my podcasting, and in my actual work with people, have done my best to dispute, disarm, confront, mm-hmm. whatever, some of these misconceptions. So one of them, I think, is that people believe that they're going to give over a lot of information to someone who is then going to tell them what to do.
Oh, I wish that that's what's happened, but that's not what happened.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's an issue with control. I don't want to mm-hmm. give anyone control over she or he's not going to tell me what to do with my life. And mm-hmm. there could be nothing farther from the truth with a good therapist.
Right.
Now, I'm sure there are therapists out there who have told people exactly what they should be doing with their lives. You should get a divorce, you shouldn't get a divorce, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But most of a good therapist will act more, my term for it is as a consultant.
Yes.
Just like you don't, most of us don't cut our own hair. Many of us don't do our own taxes.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us we take our car to a car mechanic because they know more about cars than we do. So you have people who have literally been in front of people just like you for years
mm-hmm.
and have listened to problems and have had some, obviously had some training, but they're going to act as a consultant to you, to give you recommendations and to give you ideas that perhaps you had not even, connections you had not even made, ideas that had not come to you and your partner.
Well, and something else that happens, and if, you know, and it always strikes me whenever I hear this, and I usually hear it at least once in with every couple, is when I will say something, and one person will say, I've been saying that exact same thing for years.
Oh, yeah.
And I will mm-hmm. say, yes, but your partner can't hear it from you because from you they feel like you're trying to get something from them. From me, mm-hmm. it becomes more of an observation, a statement of fact, or something. There's
sure.
no emotional... I don't have any interest other than helping my clients get where they want to go. I'm not trying to manipulate, control, change, whatever. And
right.
so people can actually hear the same thing from a third party.
Well, you're talking about, I think, Leslie, you're talking about the whole difference, the entire difference between a relationship with a friend or a family member
mm-hmm.
As compared with a relationship with a therapist, where the therapist hopefully, the only agenda the therapist has is to keep you from being destructive to yourself or to others.
Mm-hmm.
That is an agenda that we have.
Yes.
Other than that, however, we're unless we state it prior to therapy starting, such as there are some Christian therapists or you know, religious therapists that will say, my bias is to keep you married.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my bias is to prevent divorce. So if you know that up front and you've chosen that therapist, then you know, that you realize that they do have a little bit of their own agenda. However, if they do not, then the job of a good therapist, again, is to try to help you, again, figure out, identify what the problem is, identify what's maintaining the problem in your relationship, and then what needs to be tweaked to change it.
Right. And the thing is, and I love the example that you bring up about, you know, we take our cars to mechanics because our cars know more about, I mean, our mechanics know more about our cars than we do. And I think that's one of the challenges, and maybe one of, I guess it would be a misconception. It's not a stigma, but it's a misconception that there isn't anything to know about relationships. That, you know, relationships are natural, and I laugh, and it's like, yes, up to a point they are, but it's what do we do when we hit the point where we run into rough waters?
Right.
And do we want to have the knowledge to get through those rough waters, or do we just want to, you know, kind of batten down the hatches and, you know, hope we make it through okay?
Right. Yes. Well, there are lots of hatches being battened out there. And, you know, frankly, my own first marriage, I've been divorced, and my first marriage, I did that. I didn't pay attention to what was going on, and I don't think he did either, and so we found ourselves in a terrible place and never could recover. So it is an easy mistake to make. That
Absolutely.
Somehow or another relationships are just going to, you know, maybe we had parents that never went into therapy, never discussed anything in their marriage, and so that was our model, that the relationship went largely ignored or neglected. And if that's the model you grew up learning from, then that's likely what you're going to repeat. I actually one time had a man tell me, not picking on men, but I had a man tell me, I told her I loved her with the day I married her. Why do I have to tell her now? And I couldn't believe it. I thought, okay, now they do not prepare you in graduate school for this question.
I mean, that's one of the ones you sit there kind of with your mouth open just a little bit going, okay, how do I address this?
Exactly. It was wild. So we did address it, but it was pretty amusing. So I think that some of the other, if we're kind of in a place where we can talk about it now.
We're going to get there in just a minute. I need to remind people that this is Happily Ever After. It's just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking to psychologist, author, and podcaster, Dr. Margaret Rutherford, about how getting past the stigma of couples therapy can really help many marriages. And if you feel like many of my clients do, that, you know, you have to be crazy or things have to be really bad to seek help, I encourage you to rethink this. If you take your car in for an oil change or buy insurance for your home, I invite you to think of seeking guidance, help for your marriage in the same way. Taking care of small pains is so much easier than waiting until someone is ready to throw in the towel. So, you know, if you think that your marriage could use a little tweaking, and by the way, I'm going to say that's probably 90% of us, I invite you to take a moment and send me an email or give me a phone call and take advantage of my free, no obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After, what I call it, strategy session. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's FOUNDATIONS, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can give me a call at area code 919-924-0463. And I want to get back to this really important conversation about the misconceptions. And, Margaret, you talk about the one that I love, and I hear it all the time. It costs too much. It takes too much time, and it's too hard to find somebody. Now, that last one, I have some ideas about. It may be hard to find a good person.
Yeah.
And that really makes all the difference. But why are those particular perceptions inaccurate?
Well, I can talk about that pragmatically. I can also talk about what's underneath that. Mm-hmm. And I think what is underneath those concerns or those issues or those complaints is hiding a difficulty with vulnerability. If I tell myself that marriage therapy is too expensive, for example, you know, answer to that is...
Yeah, my snappy retort to that is, have you priced a divorce attorney lately?
Yeah, have you exactly. So... now, there are therapists, and in fact, the model has moved much more in this direction even in the last decade, that say, I won't talk to you unless you pay my full fee up front and I don't do insurance. So that is becoming more and more the norm.
Mm-hmm.
However, if I heard that and my marriage was in trouble, I would say, well, I've really heard great things about this therapist. I can't cross his palm the minute when I come in. Can I set up a payment plan? Mm-hmm. How can I leave you a credit card? So if I do not, you know, you can charge me. There are ways to be assertive about it. So that's sort of addressing it pragmatically.
But I also think that it's a question of not understanding the value.
Yes.
And that what these are, and maybe you're going to get to this later, it's not, they're not or shouldn't be just complaint sessions.
No, obviously not.
You know, but and it's not going to be okay, and this is a big one, which I think is kind of hidden underneath this, is that I don't want somebody to ally with my partner and gang up on me.
Well, I said a few minutes ago that individual therapy can be a breeze when it's compared to couples work, and one of the things you're mentioning, obviously, is you're sitting in front of a therapist, and you hear her or him say the same words mm-hmm. as your partner does.
Mm-hmm.
Their perspective on what they are saying is going to be different. But then you also then talk, and your partner can say, well, that's not what you said to me last night. Or, your partner can bring up things that are going to make you feel vulnerable, like
yep.
exposed. Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm not in control of the information that's being laid out here in this therapy session. And that can be, again, using the word vulnerable, very uncomfortable, uneasy, because you're not in control. And I think, you go into individual therapy, if you don't tell the therapist something, well, they're not going to know it.
Right, yeah.
I think it's an issue with
a mind reader, we don't. We're not.
Yeah, I think it is an issue with this lack of control, and it's difficult. Now, as far as finding a good therapist, I do have a little free ebook, 7 Commandments of Good Therapy, that's available on my website, which literally goes over the things that people need to understand and know about when they pick a therapist. It's very, very, very pragmatic and tangible. What you need to do, in my opinion, I mean, you either ask your doctor, your pastor, whatever, for perhaps people that they refer to and know of their work, know that they are really good at what they do, and they help people make positive change.
Mm-hmm.
They're very proactive rather than kind of sitting back and listening.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do, of course, is ask around. More than 50% of my practice are from people who have talked with other people who have seen me.
Yep.
And I have a distinct style of therapy, for example. I'm very direct. I'm pretty solution-oriented. I give you homework. I mean, it's a very active process. And so they know that coming in. And I think, you know, when you choose your therapist, you choose a therapist that has a style that you like, that you've got to feel very comfortable with them from the first session. And that way, if you educate yourself a little bit about, well, are they going to see me once a month? Are they going to see me every other week? What is their style? And what is their belief system? So I do think that helps with the vulnerability, in that you are just like you would pick, you know, if you go to the grocery store and you pick what kind of meat you're going to eat that night. If you shop around for therapists, which is completely legitimate,
mm-hmm.
that you can find somebody whose style and whose demeanor and whose treatment approach matches you, and so you feel safe, which again helps with the vulnerability.
I think there's a huge piece that I can't, you know, that we can't let this show go by without mentioning, that somebody who is a good individual therapist may not be a good couples therapist.
That's true.
Because there is a real art to being able to work with two people who may have similar but not identical agendas.
Mm-hmm.
Who can balance those agendas, who doesn't get thrown by a lot of the tension, maybe raised voices that can
sure.
show up
sure.
in couples work. I remember years ago somebody loaned my husband the first season of In Treatment, and one of his clients was a couple, and my husband was sitting there, and he kept looking at the TV and looking at me and looking at the TV, and I went, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it's, you know, somebody may be swearing by their individual therapist, but to be able to work with couples is a whole different ballgame.
Yes, it is. I'm laughing because my first office was about as, it was a closet, really. It wasn't an office. And I had two patients who were married to one another, and they were, I'm 5'3", and they were probably both 6 feet tall at least.
Oh, wow.
And they were big people. I mean, they were like big people. And they were arguing vehemently with one another, and they both, I mean, they were just screaming at one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember jumping up on TV and just going, "Stop it!" Which was probably not actually the most welcome or appropriate intervention at the time, but it was. I had to actually use my body, I felt like, to make my point. So it's, yes, well, I'll just talk about me. I think that one, of course, a good therapist is going to say, what are my issues in relationships and what am I likely to not see? I'll have a blind spot when it comes to money. I'll have a blind spot when it comes to trust. I'll have a blind spot when it comes to children. What is your blind spot? And try to get your own therapy and your own work about that. Now, of course, a consumer is not going to know whether that's happened or not, but generally speaking, if that person has helped a lot of other couples, then hopefully they have done their work.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I think the challenging thing about couples work is to balance what has been a breach of trust or what has been long-standing years of resentment or long-standing years of hurt or anger.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting with that and hearing that, but also turning it into, you know, we talked about a few minutes ago, those entrenched patterns, those ruts. You don't want it to fall back into that rut. This is, the sessions, good sessions are not about just listening to people argue with one another.
Absolutely.
Your point is to, you have to hear enough of it as a therapist, and from my perspective, to know what it must be like at home. In fact, sometimes I'll just sit back and go, is this what it sounds like at home?
Right.
And they'll say, oh, no, this is nothing compared to what goes on at home. And I think, oh, well, this is plenty.
Right.
So,
like, okay, we need to do something different, like, now.
Yes, but the skills that you have to use are good to use with couples where you actually can, I call it sort of an executive mode of therapy. Dr. Pat Love was the first person that I ever heard use that terminology. And I think you have to have a little bit more of a sense of, I need to direct where this is going because it's going downhill. And we've got
That's why they're coming to us.
That's right. And so we can say, so help me understand what's occurring to you of how you would respond to this, and they tell me, and so you slow it down, you slow the process down so that they have a chance to maybe see other possibilities or other options for both how they feel, what they say, what they're thinking, how they're interpreting their partner's reactions. One of the caveats for me of treatment is a question I like to ask couples, and we're getting a little into treatment model, and that may not be what you want, but I'll ask couples, what do you know about your partner that would explain his or her behavior that has absolutely nothing to do with you?
I love it.
For example, classic example, the spouse, one spouse is home cooking dinner, the other spouse, and they know what time, the other spouse knows what time dinner is being served, their children run around everywhere, and the spouse that's coming home is 20 minutes late and doesn't text her or his partner that that's happening. So what goes on? Partner coming home from work, walks in the door, partner in the kitchen goes, I can't believe you're late, you don't care, you know, you do this all the time. So you ask the question, what do I know about my partner that would explain his or her behavior that has nothing to do with me? What it is, for example, is I know that she can't say no, and she probably walked out of her office and there were three people lined up to talk with her, and she probably told herself, if I take time to text, you know, it's going to get home as quickly as possible. So if you know those things about your partner and you trust them, then you can soothe yourself so you're not irate when they walk in. Now, that doesn't mean it's not irritating.
Absolutely.
But you can soothe your own reactions to one another with an understanding of of the issues that maybe your partner has that have nothing to do with you.
Right. I want to go back to some of the misconceptions and one of the
sure.
things about it taking too much time.
Oh,
and
okay.
again, part of that, and I liken it to, well, if you go to the doctor at the first symptom that you have, the doctor's got a better chance of getting you healthy than if, you know, you wait till you have stage 4 cancer.
Sure.
And this is the same thing, that if people could see this as a positive, as something that would be helpful to them, like, okay, or you're driving down the, I mean, this happened to me. I used to commute an hour and a half each way.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one day I was driving, and I heard this weird noise in my car. And luckily, I had to go by, you know, the dealership was on the way to where I was going. So I just pulled off the road and went into the dealership because there was this funny noise I hadn't heard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I had a problem with the engine, and the guys go, glad you stopped in, because if you'd gone 20 miles down the road, your engine would have blown up.
Mm-hmm.
So what was a simple fix, and, you know, took me a couple of hours, but it was a simple fix versus having to have a whole new engine dropped into my car. But had I not
yeah.
stopped, you know, so it's this idea that it's going to take so long, whatever, however one defines so long, to fix.
Well, I think it's, you know, again, too many people have the conception about therapy that it's psychoanalysis 3 hours a week for 17 years or something. And
right. In that case, you need to find a new therapist, but okay.
Right. There are many modes of therapy that are much briefer and much more solution-oriented that, again, you don't see in the movies because they're not as sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that came to mind when you were giving your example is, you know, you didn't create the sound in your car.
Well, that's
so
true.
Sure, you can more readily say, well, I need to address this because something is happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think in couples work, obviously, even if someone, let's say you get slapped and you've never been slapped before, or you get screamed at, or you
mm-hmm.
or whatever. Let's say it happens the very first time.
Mm-hmm.
There is still a lot of shame about that. You don't think your neighbor ever slaps his wife or her, you know, her husband.
Right. Or ever yells at each other.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so there's this conception that, oh my gosh, something bad has happened in my relationship and I must be doing something to create it, and there is shame about that.
Yes.
So even given the fact that you're trying to say, okay, this is a problem and we need to go talk about it, you have to confront your own sense of responsibility and or shame about it, which makes it more difficult.
I think that goes back to this idea that, and I'm not, and the social media world is not helping, because nobody puts out on, or very few people put out on social media, you know, that I just had a knockdown drag out with my spouse.
Sure.
And it's actually one of the things, I mean, I've talked about it before, you know, a fight that my husband and I have had. It's like, you know, I'm not perfect. And by the way, when I'm in my own relationship, you know, I'm not, while I have access to the same, you know, to the same information I do when I'm working with my clients, I can be overcome by my own emotional stuff.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's,
well, that's never happened to me, Leslie.
Right, because therapists are all perfect, you know. I mean,
yeah.
When my kids were little, you know, they would tell me, you know, that they didn't want therapists, they wanted mom. And it's like, oh, no, trust me. Right now you want therapists because mom is losing her mind.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's hard. But there's skills that people can learn. And the thing that I want people to understand is that, unless they're lying, every couple faces the same thing. I mean, if somebody says, well, that's not going on in my household, it's like, yes, it is. It may be wearing different clothes, but there's no way that you're not running into some similar situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the mistakes. There are very common mistakes that we all make, and so it's on a spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Some people's the mistake is abusive. Others, it's irritating or disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
But as you point out, if you can attend to them when they're first happening, or when you first recognize that there's a problem, then obviously your success rate and your and the speed at which treatment is going to move is much, much, much faster.
Absolutely. So I wish we could keep talking about this, but unfortunately we're at the end of the time. So please let people know. Can you let people know where they can read your things, find out more about how to get help, find more about what you promote?
Sure. Thanks for asking. I have been blogging for over 5 years, just a little over 5 years, on my own website. I blog weekly, so there's a lot of material there. It's drmargaretrutherford.com. That's the original name. And I have a category, family relationships, where most, well, all my writing about relationships is under that category. And as I mentioned before, if you subscribe, then, which of course means give me your email, then you'll get a weekly newsletter and you'll get a free copy of my ebook, The Seven Commandments of Good Therapy. The other way of reaching out to me is my, well, two more, is my email, askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. And all those emails are confidential, and I would love to get them from your listeners. I think that would be wonderful. Then I do have up my own podcast called Self Work with Dr. Margaret Rutherford. It's on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, whatever. And that is also weekly, and I've been doing that for a little over a year. So, and I talk about really diverse things, everything from depression and anxiety and self-esteem and grief and to relationship issues as well. The
right,
other little thing that I will
that
stick
individual
in.
Individual stuff comes into play when we bring all that into our relationships.
Sure. The other thing, this past year I self-published a little book called Marriage is Not for Chickens. And it is based on a blog post I did that appeared on the Huffington Post right before my 24th anniversary, about 3 or 4 years ago. And the post itself on the Huffington Post had over 200,000 likes and 53,000 shares.
Nice.
So when it did, one, I was blown away, and two, I made a little gift book out of it. It is something that you can give your partner or your loved one or your spouse, and it's very much in honor of marriage. It's not, it's both funny, I hope,
mm-hmm.
and very poignant, but it's some beautiful artwork, and love for y'all to it's available on Amazon. Love for you to give it a look-see, and maybe for Valentine's Day, in fact, that'd be kind of fun.
It would be a great gift, and I have found in my own 31, almost 32-year marriage that having a sense of humor really helps.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
Because, as I said
It should
said
be a
before,
requirement for marriage, I think. It
absolutely.
Should be in the vows somehow. I'm not going to take everything you say seriously.
But as I've said before on the show, falling in love is natural, but being in a committed relationship that lasts is not. If people knew how many other couples face the exact same relationship challenges as they do, which is basically all of them, maybe more people would be amenable to learning what works sooner rather than waiting for the wheels to fall off and seek help when they're heading off the cliff. So prevention is worth a pound of cure, or so the adage says. And considering what's at stake, both emotionally and financially, if things go south in your marriage, doesn't it make sense to protect what you've built? And hopefully you think so, and hopefully that will keep you listening to the show and learning more about how to have healthy, happy relationships. And until next week, stay loving.